And we are live. Good Monday morning and welcome to episode 3812 of the Survival Podcast. And today we're going to do an episode called Leadership versus the Herd. And we're going to be talking about this in part due to some of my observations with what's going around on both camps with the current situation in Iraq and the Middle East as a whole, or Iran and the Middle East as a whole. But I hope that we very quickly move past that. I'm only even bringing it up because today's episode was inspired by what I'm going to call a social media experiment. I did something crazy. I asked a question, an open-ended question, very simple question, yes or no question. I made no statements whatsoever about what I thought. I just asked a question. And, of course, the shit-flinging, flying monkeys came in. And I also had another situation where I made a statement of fact, not of opinion, about something being illegal. And when you do this, you're going to get your ass beat, arrested, and thrown out of a building. And the response to that was, well, why do you support this war? When I didn't say a word about the war at all. And this just shows me that everything I've said over the years about the false dichotomies, about a lack of individual leadership, about the lack of ability to think clearly has gotten no better. In fact, I would dare say it's gotten worse. In fact, my wife is convinced, and she's done a pretty good job of convincing me, and I have no pushback available, that a certain thing that certain people put in their body, some people many, many, many times about 4 and 5 years ago, has further corrupted the ability of people to think, both the experience and the substance itself. I'll leave that to you because I don't want my video taken down, demonetized, or to be thrown into YouTube jail again. It's up to you to figure that out for yourself. And so what I want to do today is talk about this in a different way, because we've talked about individual leadership. We've talked about leadership. We've talked about entrepreneurship. We've talked about lifestyle design for almost 18 years now. But I don't ever think I've ever come at it basing it on the concept of predator versus prey. And when I say that, I know there's a lot of people that immediately think predator, bad, right? Especially if you're talking about predator, what's it, a lion? That's okay. It's a lion's nature to be a predator. Predator, human. Well, I don't really mean as in going out and, like, I don't know, cannibalizing people. That's what crazy lunatics in the cabal that run the world do, apparently. I don't mean about harming others. I mean about when we look to nature, what is our analog? What are we most like? And I would tell you that the vast majority of the people in society today are more like the cow or the zebra or the buffalo or the antelope or the wildebeest than they are like the wolf or the lion or any other predator that forms organized, structured groups like a pride or a pack. That's what I'm talking about. And the way I put it in my show notes today is the herd. All the members of the herd can do is follow the asshole in front of them. Now, you can take that literally or figuratively. It works either way. But literally, think about a cow or a zebra or any animal that's a herd animal. And think about the relative location of their head to the butthole of an animal in front of them. And literally, that's what the herd does. And the herd generally believes that somebody's in charge. But it just happens to be whichever butthole was in the front when the thing that triggered the reaction occurred. So we're going to dig into it that way. And then we're going to go off into why we've been taught leadership backwards. And I mean literally as backwards and fucked up as it can, which is why we don't have individual leadership. So that's why we can't have good leadership as a matter of course in our country today and in the world today. And then we're going to talk about some characteristics of good leaders. And I really should change that in the show notes to great leaders. Because you can be a good leader and not have all these characteristics, but you cannot be a great leader with the absence of any of them. I believe that 100%. I think when you hear them, you'll believe that too. Before we get into it, though, let's go ahead and take care of our sponsors of the day. Got to pay some bills around here. And sponsor of the day, number one today, is one of the longest standing podcast sponsors, I think, in the world of any podcast, not just mine. KnifeKits.com, who first became a sponsor of my show in 2010, which is 16 freaking years, guys. That's a long time for a company to support a podcast. They're a great company with a great product where anybody, even a person like me, can build a knife yourself. You can go there and pick out a kit, pick out some scale materials and maybe some pin material and stuff like that. If you don't know what you're doing, you can get a book or a DVD to help walk you through the process. If you're experienced and you're looking for like really badass material, like, you know, buffalo horn or mammoth tusk or anything like that, or really cool options with Damascus steel, you can find all that too. So whether you're a master bladesmith or just getting started or a hobbyist, they have what you're looking for at knifekits.com, and they'll give you a discount if you're an MSB member as well. Next up today, hey, once you have that knife, maybe you should be cutting something. And damn it, I meant to bring a package of the Biltong sticks in with me today, but I didn't do that. And what I'm going to do right now on the screen, for those of you who are here, I'm going to look for the sticks. There they are right there. These are becoming my favorite. I mean, my absolute favorite. This is these little thin strips of beef. So even though it's Biltong, it has more of a jerky-like consistency. It's not quite as soft in the middle. It is on the long of the grain, and that means that if you try to just pick one of these up and bite into it, it can be kind of tough. I think a good pair of shears, like EMT shears, are perfect for this, by the way, guys. And I cut it into little bite-sized pieces, and I'm in love with this stuff. I call it carnivore peanuts or carnivore beer nuts, because that's what it's kind of like when you want to just sit and munch on something. This is the thing to munch on. And, you know, a half-pound bag eaten that way, it'll last you a long time because it takes a while to consume each piece. You could do it faster if you wanted to, but just chill and enjoy and contemplate what you're eating. Top quality stuff. The regular Biltong's great. So are the Drewers. That's one that's probably a crowd favorite. And my personal favorite, the Calabanazzi. Now, not everybody likes the Calabanazzi. I find there's two camps. There's no, it's okay. I love it. I don't like it. So maybe try a small amount at first, see if you like it. And if you do, make it a mainstay. But check out BiltongUSA.com. Anton's been a sponsor of the show going on 2 years now. Maybe more than that. He's got to go back about 4 years. Because he popped up on our radar right about the time COVID got really big into the lockdowns and stuff. So he's been around a while. Check it out. All right. So reminder today, I am alone. Comments, questions, things like that you want me to respond to, put the word question. This is for live audience members only. If you do this after the fact, it doesn't really have any effect on the show, obviously. But if you are in the live audience and you want to ask me a question or make a comment you want me to respond to, please remember to put the word comment or question or anything like that in all caps. I'm not guaranteeing I'll see it out of my one good eye today, but it'll make it a lot more possible. So before we dig in also on the topic, I also want to just make a quick announcement. Forest Shepherd Farms joined the MSB and did so like almost a month ago. And I approved it, and Tom got it in the back office, and I think I went to Vegas, and then my mind went and farted out, and I just flaked out on it and didn't do right by the guy and let you guys know that he's available. What is Forest Shepherd Farms? There are a variety of things, but one is a level of consulting in the permaculture regen ag space, but specifically what he does that is really awesome is base maps. Meaning he's taking all sorts of data of your property and showing you everything that's possibly knowable about your property from things like satellite imagery and other things like that. It is very, very cool. I really recommend that you check into it. It is fantastic work, and it is an ability to look at a property and understand that at a totally different level. It's really useful if you own a property, okay? It's even more useful if you're about to drop hundreds of thousands of dollars on a property and you think you can do some things. You might want to know if you can or can't before you commit to that. So pre-property purchase, really, really valuable. And if you're also, if you're a consultant, if you're a Nick Ferguson, if you're somebody, yeah, he does use LIDAR, Dennis, absolutely. He's asking about that. Yeah, LIDAR as well, right? So, but if you are a consultant already in the regen ag permaculture design space, this is a way you could add a service just by putting a little margin on it and upselling it to your customers. So there's a lot of utility here. I did reach out to him and asked him to consider filling out a guest form, because I'm sure he can explain what he does better than I can, right? So hopefully we'll get him on the air. But it is in the MSB now. There's a discount code, and the discount is off of any base map package, $50. So it literally, that one service covers your entire cost of MSB for a year. And like I said, like if you're a consultant or something and you would like to add this to your design portfolio and your consulting portfolio, I'm sure he'd love that. I mean, that's how you really grow, is not everybody can do everything. So let somebody who's really good at one thing do that one thing and you do the other thing. All right. With that, let's get into it. I want to talk about this social media experiment is what I'm calling it that I did this week. And I did it full well knowing what I would get, but was I right? Would it come out that way? So first and foremost, some dude popped up on X, formerly Twitter. When are we going to stop saying that? And he said the hardest part of, let me read it exactly right so that I can be sure. Okay, the hardest part of a quick 2-week ground operation is the first 20 years. And there's a lot of flaws with that. And one would be nobody's talking about a ground operation right now, except all the critics, not any of the people that are actually in charge, as far as Iran goes. And then 2 weeks lasting 20 years when the timeline laid out on this is 4 to 6 weeks. So I'm not saying that's going to work. All I did, though, was say, considering the confidence which with this individual put this claim out there, if in 6 weeks this is all wrapped up reasonably, will you admit that you're wrong? That's it. Now, I didn't declare anything. I actually kind of, I think he's over the top, which is why I called him out, but I kind of agree with it. Like, I don't think this is as simple as it's being made out to be. But I wanted to see how somebody would respond, and more importantly, how surrounding others would respond when presented with a simple question. Because the common sense answer to that question would be, I don't think it's going to happen, but sure. Right? That would be, I was wrong. It's been demonstrated I was wrong. Sure, I will. No, what I got is, will you admit that you're wrong? Well, sure. About what, though? Well, you're implying. No, I'm not. See, the mind is vapor locked. The mind is vapor locked. It can't possibly comprehend that you could say anything other than raw, raw, raw and not be in the other herd. Because herds only recognize predators as a threat. And so if they don't realize that you're a predator, they just think, well, you must be in the zebra herd and I'm in the wildebeest herd. That's what's going on here. Then here's another example, and I won't get into the, because this is not about politics today, and this is not about what's going to happen or not going to happen. I had another guy, though, in that whole thread, you know, make this claim. I said, actually, and he had like the guy with like 75 flags in his profile. I said, I noticed you got a Ukrainian flag in your profile, so you must be pro-Ukraine war. Well, I want that war to end, and I want us to intervene so that it ends. Okay. But he said in response to my statement that I'm against, well, let's end both of them. And my response is, I'll just phone Trump up right now, bro. Hey, Donnie. Yeah, man, you need to end that shit over in Iran right now. Okay, cool. Like I have any say over it. See, these people believe that what they think actually has an impact on the outcome. If just one more person would think their way, then it'll all change. That's how the herd thinks. That's how the herd thinks. If I go left, then they should all follow my asshole to the left. And if I go right, they should all follow my asshole to the right. This is herd mentality. Well, the other one, and this one got even more shrieking and upsetness. You know that Marine guy that went into Congress and screamed, we're not going to die for Israel and all, in the military blue dress uniform? That guy, first of all, he's prior service. He's not an active duty Marine. If he was an active duty Marine, he'd be sitting in a freaking stockade right now. Because protesting in uniform is a crime under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. Technically, what he did is a crime under the Uniform Code of Military Justice as a prior service member in uniform, though such people are seldom, if ever, prosecuted for it. But it is technically under UCMJ a crime, and prior service members are subject to some things with UCMJ until the day that we die. They don't tell you that when you sign the contract, but it's true. Only, though, when representing yourself as a soldier, you know, sailor, airman, marine, coastie, what have you, okay? What do we call Space Force people? Like, we have a name for a soldier, right, for Army, Marine for Marines, you know, airman, coastie, sailor, what do we, spacey, space out, whatever. Anyway, not important. What I said in response to somebody talking about what a great hero he was and all it was, wearing your uniform as a prior military service person does not grant you special powers, and you can't break into Congress while it's in session, interfere, be told to leave, and not expect serious consequences. That was the entirety of what I said. I got a lot of shit-flinging monkeys. The most interesting one was somebody from this community who popped up and said, Jack, how can you support this war? Was anything I said in support of war, unless you're in herd mentality? Or was it a statement of fact? See, and my response to that was, Do you not understand that this man could be 100% in line with everything I view? He's not, because by the way, that guy, if you're drawn in by that stupid shit, he's running for Congress. Basically, he was being an attention whore, and he's a woke retard. He's a Marine. He's a woke retard Marine. Okay? He's for all the transtardism, all of it. Like, did you know that? See, to me, it doesn't matter, though. It's the action. You can't do that. You can't do that. He got his arm broke. He fought. And sometimes when you fight the law wins, right? You're trespassing on this is a federal crime. I'm sure he won't be prosecuted for it, unlike the January 6ers who were escorted in by police and then charged with the same crime, basically. But whatever, that's not important. My statement was a factual statement. And this guy could have been wearing a Jack Spirko for President t-shirt, and I would make the same statement. You can't do this. You can't do this. This is an illegal action. It's going to, whether I think it should or not, it's going to result in this consequence. But the herd can't see past it. I'm hoping that that's the last I have to say about the current situation in today's show. I'm really not trying to sway anybody's opinion there. What I'm trying to do, as I've always done, is teach people how to think. When I break down a situation and when I do that, have you ever noticed this? I've never done a show. I believe this because I do, and then you should too, and let's go on to the next thing. I always break down the reasoning behind why I believe it. That is not so I can convince you I'm right, and so you can see my thinking process, and hopefully employ your own thinking process and come to your own conclusion. I think one of the reasons that is difficult for people to understand is that nobody does it. And so when anybody says they're doing it, they're immediately like, no, that can't be. That's just marketing, in the words of Paul Wheaton, right? No, I'm serious. Like, I know that what you think and what I think about this issue, like I said, I don't think anybody listening to me right now is able to pick up the phone and go, yo, Donnie, hey, man, cut the shit over there. And by the way, when you said America first, you were supposed to mean it. So, like, do all the America first things, and then he'll do it. Like, if I thought I could do that, maybe I'd have a different opinion on some things. But I don't. I have to accept things are the way they are. Then I have to decide what to do with that. And that leads to leadership. And that leads to leadership that has to begin with and end with yourself before anything else. And that's where I want to bring in the analogy, right? I want to bring in the analogy to predators versus prey. I want you to consider predators in groups like wolves or lions versus a herd of animals for just a moment here. And understand, since it's an analogy, it's not a perfect fit. We can't run around acting like a herd of lions and just killing everything that we want to eat, especially if they happen to be people that believe differently than us. Okay? But the analogy works. And here's how I mean that. If you look at a wolf pack or a lion pride, there's a definitive leader in that pack or that pride, but it's also a hierarchy. There's an alpha male, but and that alpha male, and there's no feminism. There's no fucking feminism in a lion pride, I promise you. That male is bigger and stronger than everybody else there, and everybody knows it. Everybody. Including the pain in the ass jackals and hyenas around the corner. They know that big black mane lion will fuck shit up if he needs to. And that's his role, because he is there not just to be part of the pride and not just to be in charge of the pride, but above all, to protect his pride. And that's why leadership is very serious to these creatures. And the moment that that lion is no longer alpha, because usually you have two big mature males in a pride, there's only two choices. Become the second in the command of the male structure, or get killed or leave. That's it. And when young lions come up in a pride, that's what keeps the genetic diversity. They end up, the females stay and the males leave and establish new prides. And it's dead serious to the point of death. And that means the best leader for that pride is always in charge. But it's not like, you know, like Lion King, the movie with Scar. It's not like that, right? That second male, that is the brother of that first male usually. And if it's not physically the brother or a half brother, they become like brothers and they work as a team, and they see their role, defend the pride. And when certain things can't be accomplished, go accomplish them. Like I saw a documentary one time, there was like a bunch of female lions and they're trying to pull a warthog out of the hole. And the old man's just laying there watching him doing the tail twitch that cats do. And finally, you can see in his face, they're like, damn it. He gets up, walks over, and just yanks that freaking warthog out, bites his neck, kills him in a half a second, and just walks off and lets, like, he was full, I guess. He let the girls have it. But you get what I'm saying. The right leader is always in the top, but there's leadership roles throughout the whole pride. The lowest female in the pride that has cubs is doing leadership by, one, contributing to the hunting and defense of the pack, but also training her cubs how to become the next generation of lions. Contrast that with the herd. Who's the alpha in a wildebeest herd? There isn't one. Now, you can have a herd bull kind of situation, but that's just defending the right to breed. That's all that really is. And that's usually more in like animals like elk and stuff. When you get into really big herds, there's no little, like elk, you'll have like this one bull and he'll have like a harem of like 30 cows he's off with by himself, maybe one lesser bull. You get into like plains game in Africa, you can look and you could see animals to the horizon. There's none of that shit. You know who's in charge? Whoever happens to be at the front of the direction we're moving now. Doesn't that sound a lot like, oh, I don't know, most people in this country? Whichever way, the media, the party, the politic goes, they go too. And this is where you have people who were vehemently anti-war 2 years ago, not saying, hey, I don't know how this is going to work out. And if it works out well, then that's a good thing. But I really don't like it. That's kind of my position, by the way. You have them saying, like, justifying equivocally attacking another country and killing their entire leadership team. Like, all the people in charge. Now, in a war, maybe that's what you need to do. But you better think about the precedent it sets. If that is an act of war and that is okay to do in war, then it's okay for everybody to do in war, especially when the biggest dog in the pack does it, which we are, believe it or not. So we have to think differently by this. And the only way to do that is to realize that almost every apparently binary choice you are given, the people that gave you the choice are fine with you choosing either option. Do you understand that? Do you understand that all these Democrats in Congress and shit that are shrieking and yelling right now about this war, if freaking a Democrat was, if Kamala Harris was doing this, though I still say, at least it's not Kamala, is a legitimate response to anything Orange Man has done yet, anyway. But if she was doing this, they'd be talking about the courage of a female leader, warrior, who nobody expected to be this strong and powerful. And the Republicans would be saying most of the same stupid shit the Democrats are. See, this isn't picking a side. This is, why do you think you have to? So that my children will know they're not going to know or care. Stop. Stop. Stop making shit up to justify your shit. If you really believe in one or the other, fine. Then what I'm saying today shouldn't hurt you. And it applies to way more than this. You should always come up with two more choices when anybody gives you a binary choice. It's a matter of habit. Let's say, like, I mean this level of habit. You get up in the morning, what's the first thing you do? Probably go to the bathroom. And one of the things you do is brush your teeth. It's a habit, hopefully. So your teeth stay in your mouth, right? It's a habit. When you're a kid, your parents had to tell you to do it and all, but as you grow up doing it all the time, you get up, you brush your teeth. You get up, your mouth tastes like shit, so brushing your teeth makes that go away. It's an incentive, right? Anything like that, I want this to be like that habit for you. Think of things that you just do. No one has to remind you. You just do them. And you do them all the time, every time, because they are in your life, they fit a pattern habit that is beneficial to you. It's following an incentive. So when somebody says A or B, before you even consider A versus B directly, you should just absorb the two positions and say, what are two alternatives to these two positions? Don't be afraid. It's okay. It's okay to come up with alternatives when you're presented with two. You're endorsing one side or the other will not influence the outcome. I mean, if it's like in your family and you're the dad and you're in charge, you say, yes, we're going here instead of there. Sure. But the type of stuff we're talking about today, when you are told from a third party in a situation where you have very little influence on the outcome, you only have two choices, you change nothing externally by coming up with two other options. What you do is train your mind to be problem-solving mode at all times. And you become very difficult to control. And you may, in fact, find yourself coming down on the side of A or B, or mostly A or mostly B, which will totally piss off the monkeys. Or you may realize that C or D is actually a better position to operate from for you, not me. I really don't care what you choose. I just care that you know why you've made the choice you make. And you can't be a leader at all until you do that. And part of the problem we have is that everything that we have been taught about leadership in so many ways is just wrong. And I'm going to say some things today that you are taught about leadership, either directly, in other words, the exact words given, or that they sound reasonable when you hear them. And yeah, that's kind of the gist of the totality of how society works. And when I first say them, some of you may be like, well, yeah, that's true or that tracks. But when something is taken as absolute, that's only partially true or only a piece of the truth, it's almost as it's actually worse than a full on lie. The old saying is, you know, if your watch is off by 10 hours, you're fine. If your watch is off by 10 minutes, you're fucked. Okay, that's not the way they actually say it, but you get the point, right? That's the Jack Spirko version. That's the Spirkoism, okay? When it looks close to right, you tend to believe it more. So let's go through some of these. Number one, we are taught first to follow and then to lead. Well, that makes sense. How can the person with no experience become a leader before they learn how to follow a good leader in front of them? Like I said, partially true. But that is not part of your path of leadership. Being able to simply be a good follower does nothing. Nothing. It can't be the first step on a path toward becoming a leader. Because there's no leadership in it. Anybody can follow. That's why we have so many damn followers. That's why most people are part of the herd instead of the pack or the pride. That's why there's so many E4 Mafia compared to sergeants in the army. That's why there's so many people that work at a company and so few directors and vice presidents. It's not just because they don't like you and they're being mean. It's because only a few actually go on a leadership path. Now, here's the interesting thing. Most people that actually walk a leadership path from a very early age become great leaders. It's like becoming anything else. You can become whatever you want because where your attention goes, your energy flows. Okay? So if what you want is to become really physically fit and you switch onto that at like the age of 14 and you start hitting the weight room at school, you join a team, you start working out, you eat well, by the time you're 20, you're probably going to be pretty freaking jacked. And no one will be surprised by it because a person made a choice to walk a path and they stuck to the path and therefore they got the expected outcome. Now, there might be a guy sitting right next to you that doesn't work anywhere near as hard as you, but he hit the genetic lottery from a physicality and he doesn't abuse his body. He's not sitting down, you know, like sucking down, you know, bag after bag of Fritos and Ho-Hos and Ding Dongs. And he actually moves a little bit. So like maybe he looks better than you at 20. But doesn't mean you look bad. Some people are natural leaders and some people have to work harder at it, but everybody can get there. That's my point. But how do you get on the path? If we make a statement and we say it's false, right, or it's only partially true, then we have to have something to replace it with. And the reality is we must first learn to lead ourselves, then we can follow good leaders, and then we can become good leaders. But if we don't take that step first, to first take on the role of independently leading ourselves, then we don't even make really great followers. We don't even make really great team players. We're the mob, right? There's an old saying, I think it was Heraclitus said it, and it was, out of 100 men, 90 don't even belong there. They're nothing but targets, right? And something like, you know, 9 of them are fighters, and we're lucky to have them, but one, he is the warrior, and he will bring them home. Well, most stay in that 90 or 80 or whatever that number was in that quote. They never come out of it. They never get into mid-tier leadership because they never start from a standpoint of leading themselves. We really should be taught to lead ourselves first. That should be the first step. If you want a nation of leaders that are also good team members and good followers when it's not their time to lead, then you need to spread leadership as much as possible. And leadership of yourself, individual leadership, the willingness to say, I'm going to do a thing and then hold yourself accountable to get that thing done. By the way, the little example with the 15, 14-year-old kid who took getting in shape seriously and got there by 21, that was self-leadership in case you didn't recognize it because I kind of planned it that way. Anyway, you also have to be taught how to identify good leaders. That should be part of your training as a leader. If you have a good mentor in leadership, which like when you're young, that should be your parents, maybe your coaches, your teachers, if there's any good ones left. And I know there are, right? That should be also be like, look, Marcus is a good leader. This is what makes him a good leader. This is why I made him captain of the team. If you want to be captain of the team someday, here's the things about Marcus that made me pick him for that leadership role. It's not just because generally speaking, if a coach is good, your captain isn't necessarily the most athletically talented person on the team. They're athletically talented. Maybe they're top five, maybe they're top two, maybe they're top three. But the role you're looking for in leadership is different than just straight performance. Leadership is different. Leadership is a thing that makes another person decide, I want to follow you. I want to be more like you. I trust your decision-making better than my own in this moment. That's what leadership really is. You ever thought about that? Like you always have an opinion about what you should do next. And when I don't mean when you say put somebody over you and you have no choice, when someone says we need to do this and you look at it and go, yep, I'm doing that. I'm going with them. You have in that moment and in that instant made a determination that you trust that other person's opinion about what to do and the action they're going to take more than your own, or at least equally. Like that's what I would do too. So I'll see that works too. But even the person that agrees with you, and you're like all in on their idea. If you don't have confidence in their ability to lead and execute that idea, you're not going to follow them willingly anyway. See, great leaders are followed by the choice of those who follow them, not just by position. So we need to first lead ourselves, and then we need to be taught how to identify good leaders, then taught how to become good leaders. That's the process. Lead yourself, identify good leadership, model good leadership, become a good leader. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, if you're not in the military or maybe law enforcement, probably no one's ever explained it to you that way before, unless you were listening to something like this show when it happened. I mean, at your job, at school, can anybody here tell me that you were ever had that laid out to you that way in your career progression outside of something like military, paramilitary, law enforcement? Maybe something with medicine, I guess. I don't know. I know that it's not very common because I know when I explain this in talks to people in person, I see the light up in the eyes that only comes from a person who's like, yeah, oh, like they knew it, but they didn't quite know how to articulate it and they never heard anybody say it before. Or maybe even they knew it and they could articulate it, but there was nobody to listen to them. And since nobody said it, they were doubting themselves as to whether they were right. You're right. This is a path to leadership. And once you learn how to become a good leader and you start acting as a leader, over time, your confidence increases. But there's some things you have to stay humble with, and we'll get to that in the next section. And then we should be taught to beware of and question incompetent leadership. Now, this is something that never happens. Do you see a 10th grade teacher telling his students to question incompetent leadership in a classroom today? If he's not really good at what he does, if his kids are not like, I love Mr. Smith or I love Miss Thompson, like if they're that powerful of a leader themselves, because good teachers are always good leaders, they lead a class, okay? If they're not that person and they say that, and they're like, you know, probably 60% of government employees. I mean, I could say teachers, just government employees in general. When your standard is that the person who checks all the boxes and just gets by is treated equally to the person who excels, you're going to get a majority of people that just check the boxes. They just show up. They do a fine job, you know, based on the criteria given to them. They follow. They don't lead. And then you get some group within there that sort of does a little bit better. And then you get people that are fantastic leaders in that role, whether they ever get promoted or not, doesn't matter. And they are because they've either chosen to design leadership into their life or they're innate leaders that can't help themselves. That when they start getting up in front of that group of kids and start talking to them, they see light bulbs go on. They're like, oh, I got through to Johnny finally. And like, that does it for them. That person can tell Johnny that. But I've seen some of the public school teachers we have, and if they, kids are not as dumb as we think. In fact, they're probably smarter. I think the average American today is probably smarter in about 10th grade than like 24. Now, I know that doesn't, I didn't say they knew more, but what I'm talking about is street smarts. They haven't been as fully indoctrinated yet, if that makes sense. And so if they hear something like that, boy, I was spacing out, but I heard that, and I think you're incompetent because I don't pay attention to you because you don't lead. Now, sometimes it's an arrogant shithead kid, but kids that really want to lead, here's how you know when you have poor teachers, by the way. How do we judge them on merit if they get all the dumb kids or whatever? When you have kids and you can look at their grades, and their grades look like this, A, B plus, C, D, C. Look at those teachers they're getting the C's and D's from. Not always. But it's a good starting point. But we need to be taught to question incompetent leadership, even if not directly. Like in the military, if you are directly reporting to a sergeant and you're a PFC, you can't question that leadership and call that leader out. But you're going to question it here in your head. So you might want to have a process for how to deal with it, because in that situation, you still have to follow that incompetent leader. It doesn't mean you can't mitigate his bad decisions. But in most instances, you're not in the military. Most people are not in the military. It's something like 3% of people ever serve. And at any given time, it's something like 1% of the adult populations are in service. I don't even think it's that. No, it's like a quarter of a percent, just on the raw numbers, trying to figure out how many kids there are. Of age, maybe it gets close to one, but no, I'm still saying it's like a quarter point. So that means we have to speak to the majority here in a talk like this. And so you're not in a situation where you have to do everything exactly the way you're told by this one person, right? So don't act like it. And even if you do, then you need to mitigate it. And incompetent leadership sometimes results in this decision. Okay, there's nothing I can do to change this where I'm at. So I need to change where I'm at. I would rather make a lateral move to another company than serve under an incompetent leader, especially if that leader's role can make me miserable, that's one, impede my advancement, that's two, right, or get me or somebody else hurt, because a lot of jobs aren't military, you can still get hurt. There's actually a lot of jobs with a higher death rate per person in that field than the military, believe it or not. In fact, you know, another one people think of as really dangerous is law enforcement. And it is in the top 10 for deaths on the job. But do you know where most law enforcement officers die? Car accidents. They're either hit on the side of the road by somebody with the flaming moth thing, right? Or they get into a car wreck. And it makes sense because they're in the car all the time. They're actually really close to like the number of deaths per individual with like, you know, taxi drivers and truck drivers because you're on the road all the time. I'm not putting it down. I'm just saying that's the truth, right? Leaders have to speak the truth. I don't have that, but that's a bonus for you today. And this all must be, of course, tempered with some humility. You don't know what you don't know. I get a little bit nervous having this conversation with 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds who have no life experience yet. That's the problem, Jack. My leadership is incompetent. Well, maybe. But if you were really working on being a leader, you would see that as an opportunity rather than your problem. So what are the characteristics of great leaders? What makes somebody a great leader? And I think if you don't have all of these, you're not a great leader. You have to have them all, at least to a degree. You have to be cognizant of them. And where you're weak, you have to work on being a little bit better than them. Yeah, Top is on my percentage. Yeah, I know Top. He says 1.3 million active in Guard Reserve currently out of 330 million U.S. But what portion of those 330 million are after age of service or before age of service? So where you couldn't join if you wanted to. I'm not sure. But it's got to be a fraction of a percentile even with that. Anyway, if you're a good leader, you will carefully consider all options, comma, given the time available. Okay? And what I mean by that is you might have to very quickly make a choice. If you're being shot at, there's a certain amount of your innate training you have to immediately fall back on. Like, we got to get off the fucking X. We got to take cover, look for concealment, but cover and concealment are better, like that type of thing. Right? So I get that you don't always have an hour or a day or a week to make a decision, and you have to act fast. But based on the time limit you have, when you're making a decision about what to do in a division of a company, nothing has to be done this second. You just figured out you're going to make a change. Great. You got time. You need to consider every option, and you need to, like, good leaders also know how to manage their teams. And that means that you go to key team members that you have identified as potential leaders of their own. And you say, I'm bringing you into my confidence. I'm going to make some changes. This is some of the things on the table right now. Nothing has been decided yet. What do you think? And what would you do if you were in my position? Most people in leadership roles, especially in corporate America, can't do that because they have an internal problem. They're not leaders. They know they're not leaders. And therefore, they fear a threat to their leadership by making that, by laying that out. And they've never been taught to do it. So, like, one of the things you have to do when you do that is say, Tom, Mary, Sam, whoever, I want you to understand, I'm going to listen to everything you have to say. Eventually, I'm going to make my decision. I'm bringing you to my confidence. It's really important to me that you don't discuss this with other members of the team. And I would just say none. Like, if I'm bringing others in, they don't even need to talk to each other, because that always bleeds out, right? But I want you to understand that in the end, I'm going to make the decision here. I'm just seeking your input before I do. So just because you give me input doesn't mean I'm going to do it. But I'm going to listen and I'm going to consider it. Those people will fucking take bullets for you. They'll fucking die for you. They will fucking fight for you when you treat people that way. Again, why don't we teach this? I think it would be kind of disruptive to a system that is run on a 90% follower ratio, in an intentional 90% follower ratio. Because, again, there's so many people in roles of leadership that aren't actually leaders, that people understanding the mechanism of leadership are a threat to their power, at least so they think. They also, you know, this is another characteristic. You have to listen to the concerns of those you lead. It doesn't mean you have to make a decision because of those concerns. It doesn't mean you have to yield to those concerns. But it does mean you need to listen. When you're making a decision that is going to be ill-received, you need to know it's going to be ill-received so that you can mitigate it and you can do your best to explain why it has to be. You have to be able to explain, I know you don't like this, but we have no choice. Here's an example from my background. And I wasn't the leader, though there's a part of leadership in there I can't talk about today. I don't have enough time. But the guy that was an operations manager for a company I worked for changed the software that we used for bids and estimating and pricing our services and our products and all that stuff. And we went from basically this customized version of Microsoft Access to a program software system called Master Builder 6. Now, several of the project managers in that company did an awful lot of fucking work to make the Access customized system work really good, and it did. It was actually, once you learn to use it, very fast to use, very quick, very accurate, and it fit our accounting internally very well for how project managers and salespeople got paid. So when you change to something that no one helped build, it's brand new, and there's no explanation as to why given, you end up with a full-on revolt, and that's what happened. I was new to the company. I adapted to that software really quick. I did have some complaints about it, but when those complaints were finally addressed by my boss, a gentleman named Ron, he explained to me, Jack, I had to make this change. I had to sell ownership on it and then make this change. It was expensive. I didn't want to do it, but in our industry, there's some new regulations, and there is nothing that we can do with that customized thing that we pieced together that will meet those requirements. It can't be done, and it would cost us a fortune to try and probably fail. This system is designed to work with the government's bullshit, and it puts out everything that we need to comply with their bullshit, just shortening it. And he asked me if I would write a user's manual for it, because I had hacked the system and figured out how to make it put out the internal accounting information we needed. And if I'd get on board, and he said, you know, if you do it, they'll follow you because you're not me. You're not the bad guy. That's knowing how to use your inner leader. That's what that is. And that's what I was at that point in time. I didn't know it yet, which is a very dangerous fucking place to be. To be an inner leader inside an organization and not know people are following you, you can do a lot of damage to yourself and your reputation, right? This was the first point that gentleman realized I didn't know what I was doing, that I was just doing what I thought was right. He didn't understand that I wasn't basically trying to take his job. I didn't want his job. I actually made more money than him, so why would I want his job is the way I looked at it. If you're a good salesman, you probably don't want to get promoted to a point where you're not paid commission anymore. But you have to listen to the concerns of people. So you also, as the leader, then have to address those concerns. When I went out and started talking to all the PMs and the other salespeople and said, hey, I talked to Ron, and this is why we did this, everybody went, oh, well, shit, I guess we have to do this now. Yeah, we do. Or the company's effed without it. That's just one example. But and that was a complicated one, which is why I used it as an explanation, and it's real, too. But there's always concerns. When you do a thing, you can change a compensation package so that your people are going to make more money if they just keep doing what they've done. But if they work and lean into what you want them to do at further incentivize, they're going to make even more money, and they will still resent it if you don't explain it to them and make sure that they understand that, look, this is already going to benefit you, but if you do it with the incentives are asking you to do in this compensation plan, you're going to make even more money. Well, then you're addressing their concern. You're cutting my pay. No, I'm actually giving you a way to grow your pay. You better be telling the truth too. Good leaders, another bonus, are always honest. Good leaders also always consider second, third, and fourth level effects. And this is directly at odds with a lot of the systems ingrained into corporate America today. When I was in sales, I was judged on this week, this month, and this quarter. And then once a year, I was judged on my past year. And by January 10th, nothing I fucking did prior to January 10th fucking mattered. What have you done this year? And that pattern repeats over and over. And it's not just in sales, right? It's not just in sales. It's not even just in things that have direct objectives and metrics to measure them. I don't care how good you've been in the past. I care about right now. And I understand that to a degree. I understand that to a degree because you do have to keep productivity up, and you can't pay somebody today for what they did yesterday if they already got paid yesterday. I understand that. But we also have to think about, well, like when we do this thing, this is seventh generational thinking applied to corporate America. When I do this and it results in that, what will that result in? In other words, if I do this thing, for instance, in sales, maybe it's going to result in an upswell in sales. But will it long-term cost us money? If I over-discount a service or a product, are my customers going to eventually decide, well, did it before, I'll do it again, so I'll always ask for that price? If you do it wrong, the answer is yes, it will. And then is it recoverable? Once they realize, oh, that was a one-off, will they come back? I don't know. It depends. When you make a management change that will have a positive impact for one group of your people, will it have a negative impact for your other group of people? Will that create resentment inside your organization? And if so, is it worth it? It doesn't necessarily mean you don't do it, but you better know what it is. This thing that's going to make your company sell a lot more and make your customers happy, will it destroy the relationship you have with your people inside the organization? If you're a government and you decide I can bomb this country and take them out, but what do other countries do? See, this works from managing a kindergarten to managing a country, this mindset, because it's all the same. Now, the qualifications, the experience necessary, the expertise, that changes. But the system doesn't change. The functionality of what leadership really is, what it really looks like, and what makes it effective is always the same. And that doesn't matter if the leader is leading for good, neutral, or evil. It doesn't matter. The effective ratio is the same. That's why you better recognize it. Because when you have a leader who actually is a really good leader, but what they're doing is bad, you're going to get more bad. And when you, because you don't like them, you underestimate them, you become more vulnerable. And yes, that could be on the global scale. That could also be in office politics. Don't underestimate good leaders just because you don't like them. And don't fool yourself like, but no one likes them. If they're good leaders, somebody likes them. And the people they need to get where they're going, they make sure that those are those people. That may not even be a leader. That may be a master politician. But even the evil master politician can also be a good leader. He's just leader of the troops you want to fight against. You need to understand this. Good leaders, when it comes to crunch time, they act with full confidence, even if they're not sure. I've considered all the options. There's four real ways forward. I had to pick one. After careful consideration, I picked option two. When I look at option two, I go, I don't know if it's going to work. I'm not even sure it's the right call. But in this situation, at this time, at this moment where I have to act, everything in my experience, everything based on the advice I've taken, everything on my evaluation of the situation tells me option two is the best chance we have going forward. That conversation, that way, can be had with your senior leadership team. It cannot be had below that level. And sometimes you can't even have that conversation with your leadership team if they're not strong and advanced enough yet to do so. And when you say we're going with option two, it needs to be like, we've chosen option two. We're going to go forward and it's going to work. If you don't believe it, they won't believe it. And if you don't believe it and it sounds like you don't believe it, they're really not going to believe it. The minute that you drop the hint of this could fail, but it's the best we've got, this is what everybody hears. So I won't be judged harshly if this fails because of me. So they're going to try a little bit less. It's human nature. There's not really much you can do about it other than prevent it from happening in the first place. When you make that final call as a leader, your people have to feel like he or she has our best interest at heart. He has our back. I don't necessarily like this. It's not necessarily what I would have done, but I'm going to support this fully because I trust this leader. If you don't have that, you're not a great leader. It takes a lot of self-work to become a great leader. Becoming a great leader isn't reading a bunch of books. It isn't learning a bunch of phrases. It isn't learning how to make other people act. It's learning how to act in such a way that people want to act in a way that leads them to follow you. Again, I don't know that anybody's ever explained this to most of you before. Leaders also have another intrinsic characteristic. A real leader. Not an optimistic person who just wants to get ahead and have a leadership title. Real leaders. People that if you put them in a situation and they don't know anything about it, they immediately look for another leader and follow them. Or when they do know and they look around and realize no one else really knows what to do here, they just take charge. Those people. One of their characteristics is they recognize innate leadership in people, including when it has yet to be developed. So the first kind is easy. That person already is a good leader. They know more about this thing than me. They should be in charge right now. Even if I'm their boss, if they have a lot of experience in this area, I'll put them as a product lead and I'll follow them. Okay? Or a project lead and I'll follow them. Yeah. But the real talent and leader looks at the young 20-something and says, that's my guy or that's my gal. I'm going to develop them. And sometimes you think, boy, I really hope I work for somebody like that. You might not. Not at first, anyway. If I identify that in you back when I was in the corporate world, not everything I do is going to make your life easy. I'm going to gut check you on some things. I might do something like give you an opportunity at a promotion that I know you're not going to get. That, like, we have two candidates and I'll make you a third. You're not ready yet. And you're going to fail. But I'm going to watch how you fail. And if you impress me in how you fail, you're going to get other opportunities. In other words, I might put you in a situation where, like, you have to make a presentation of how you would handle your new role. And maybe there's a left field chance that you're going to come into it and be like, hey, I would, and everybody's going to go, holy shit, I didn't know he was that good. But we pretty much have decided it's either going to be Bill or Tom and you're Sam, right? And you're taking a shot at it. But I know that one day I'm going to put you in that situation when I think you're ready. And I know that by giving you that early opportunity to fail in a controlled environment and learn from it, you'll be more prepared when your opportunity comes, when your shot at that promotion comes, or whatever it is. I may put you in charge of people who are completely idiotic on a job. I may give you, like in this cabling world, I would give you like the two worst techs that we had, two temps that have been on the job for a week. But we'll give you a pretty easy job to do with it, but you're going to have to deal with their shit. I want to see if you can. Including, I got tired of these two clowns. You told me they were temp employees and I could send them back to the office, so I did, and I did the job myself. I don't actually have a problem with that, but it may change the type of leadership role that I'm going to give you. I know you're not a trainer. I know you're not a teacher. You still may be a type of leader, but you're not that type of leader. If I come back and one of them's gone and your justification was, I evaluated both of them. I talked to both of them. I worked them half a day. At lunch, I had a 10-minute conversation with both of them. And I determined that one was teachable and the other one was just here to draw a paycheck. And I knew that with one of them following my lead, we could do this job perfectly and I could end the day giving you a much better tech than you had this morning. And the other one's equal to that. If you really want to find somebody else to deal with them, I'm fucking promoting that person if I can. And they're on a short list for the next fucking promotion I can offer them. Again, if somebody would explain, you know how many people that are out there just starting in their careers? That if somebody would just explain this to them, they'll do it. They'll work on it. They'll realize that 90% of my work on becoming a better leader is inside of myself and 10% is external. But the difference is the 10% that's external, right? That only has a limited effect. In other words, every time I get a new person, I have to lead. I have to do it all over again. But the 90% that's internal is compounding. Everything I put into me stays there forever unless I have a head injury or something. But if you can't spot the leader before they're really there yet, then you have work to do on that. And looking at the characteristics, and let me explain, that leader can be kind of look like a fuckhead because they don't know they're a leader yet. They could be always joking around and shit, but what you find is that other people follow them down that fucked up road. And then all you have to determine with that person is, are they coachable? Can I, because that's the best leaders you'll ever develop. I've developed some like this. You pull them in and say, dude, look, I want to talk to you. You do good work, right? You do good work. When I quality check your work, it's always pretty good. You could do more because if you were fucking off less, you would get more work done. Well, I don't know if you realize this, but everybody on this crew, everybody in this group, everybody in the office, everybody in this squad, whatever, they follow your lead. Are you aware that you're leading them? And you usually get this when somebody has that conversation with you for the first time, you usually get a look of like confusion is the best word I look. It kind of looks like they're trying not to crap their pants while they're solving a calculus problem in their head at the same time, because I don't know if this guy's jacking with me or he's serious. And it's kind of like when you have the conversation with the older sibling, you tell them your younger brother or younger sister wants to be like you. They idolize you and they just think the kid's a pain in the ass. They don't understand they're actually being a leader. And when that kind of goes into that young person, they're like, no. And then you continue that conversation. I see incredible potential. I have incredible potential for you as a leader, whether it's here or when you go on to go somewhere else, either way. And I'm willing to invest in you as a leader, but you have to knock the shit off. And you have to be willing to invest in yourself, because I'm not going to invest in you if you won't invest in you. Do you want my help? Do you want my mentorship? That's leadership. If you don't create leaders, you're not leading anything. You're just opportunistic, right? You're a mercenary. You're an independent contractor, even if you're on a team. How many football players can you think of, or if you're sports basketball or whatever, you think of like that? If their team loses, fuck it. Did I set another record? Right? Did I, you know, make the most receptions in a regular season or something? As long as their stats are good, they're happy. And then there's the guy gives a fuck all about his stats, even if they're great. But he's always the one screaming from the sideline, dig deeper, let's make it happen, we can't give up. Doesn't have the C on the jersey, but everybody fucking listens to him. That person, when you can identify them before they become that person and mentor them, they become even better when they get there. And if you are that person, the sooner you become aware of it, the more powerful you'll become as a leader and the more compelled you'll become to pass it on. And one thing I know about most of the really great leaders I've ever worked with, there was a great leader that recognized their leadership and encouraged it and mentored it and cultivated it. And sometimes those great leaders did it in ways that weren't as obvious as what I just gave you. Sometimes it was handing a couple, three books over time to a lower enlisted soldier as a captain and saying, Spirico, I think you should read this book. And then realizing, I'm a fucking private. The commander gave me this book to read, and looking around and everybody's dicking off in the barracks or in the tent or whatever, and like, oh, it was me. I got this. Maybe I should pay attention to it. And when it ends up being a book on General Patton and how he prepared troops for the Second World War, and it was primarily based on his leadership qualities, you go, oh, maybe he's trying to tell me something. So you can pick your style. That captain was a West Point grad, by the way. I thought I knew what that would be like. This is the only one I ever served with or under. Did have one in my airborne class, but that doesn't count. He almost landed on me too. Big freaking dude. Played for the football team. He almost landed on me on a training jump. But Captain Welsher was the only one that I ever directly worked for. That was his style. My style is more flat out telling you, I have identified you as a potential leader. All of it works. But if you're not identifying and cultivating leaders, what the fuck are you leading? What are you doing? If you're not self-replicating, what good are you? You know who doesn't want to self-replicate? People that don't want to be replaced. Because the biggest thing that I see in great leaders is they rejoice when somebody they've mentored, when a team member reaches their level, or even more when they exceed it. When you have a leader who looks one day and sees 10 years down the road, his former mentee, right? I guess that's the former person he mentored, his former student, his former subordinate. And they're now two, three levels beyond where he's at, where she's at. And that person thinks, fucking A, good for them. Man, I knew they had it in them. And when that person meets you and they're like, I knew you could do it, they don't take credit for it, even though they get a lot of credit for it. That I knew if I told you what to do and you did that shit, no. That's a chest pounder. That's a puffer, right? Those are not the people. They're not leaders. That's a person that's not trying to grab onto your coattails and be pulled forward as I'm responsible for what this person became. I very much am gratified when I look at people that excel, that I've helped in some way along the way, that I've mentored in some way along the way. But I never claim credit for their success. Because then I have to claim credit for everybody's fucking failure, right? All the people who I tried to help who didn't fucking do it, if I get credit for the one that does, then I must be responsible for the one that didn't. Well, that doesn't make any sense. It does if you want to claim credit for either side. Yeah. But it doesn't make any logistical sense. I told Bill all the things to do, and he didn't do them. I told Tom all the things to do, and he did 9 out of 10 of those and made his own way with the other 10%, and he became a success. Bill and Tom were their own difference, not me. I was just an opportunity along the way. Just an opportunity along the way. That's what good leaders are, as compared to leaders that are up and coming. You're their opportunity. Just like you've had many opportunities in your life and you took some and you didn't take others. Sometimes that opportunity comes in the form of a solid leader sitting in front of you who's willing to help you develop yourself. And you either take the opportunity or you don't. A lot of reasons people don't take it. One, they just don't have a work ethic. Two, they can't understand that the leadership is internal. Three, they just think they're smarter than everybody else and they're going to do things their own way. And usually that person fails miserably. And the worst thing that can happen to that person is the first thing they try works. Then they become convinced they're a genius and they can't be taught anything else. And then it's downhill from there. And so one of the things that really makes great leaders is to realize that no matter how far I go, no matter how much I know, no matter how much confidence and expertise I develop, I can still be wrong. I can still be fallible. I can still make mistakes. And I still need to take all those options into consideration. I still need to have those conversations with my leadership team and my subordinates. And if I'm in a good organization, I need to have conversations with the people above me as well in a way that is proactive and for accomplishing my goals. And know one thing about when you go up, you better be coming to them with, I am down to these two things, and here's my justification for it. And all I'm looking for is some guidance or some ideas or some thoughts that maybe something I missed. Because if you're going to your boss, this is true when you're at the bottom, the middle, the upper level, it doesn't matter. If you bring everything to your boss, why the fuck did I hire you? Is how I think about it. Like, if you can't make that call, I don't need you. But when the person that's, they come to me once a month, once every couple weeks with something like that, I'm always available, always engaged. Okay, if you're asking. Now, if it becomes chronic, so it is weekly, it is biweekly all the time, there's never a big gap in it, okay, maybe we need to talk. But in most instances, you come up, you better have 90% of the work done when you come up, because then that the person that's supervising you is like, I'd rather you come to me with this than me ask you about it 2 weeks from now. It's not done. Or when you do it, and I really know that you thought you were right, but it's going to be wrong, and I didn't get an opportunity to tell you, I'm kind of pissed because this was a critical thing and you'd never done it before. So maybe you should have checked. Those are the characteristics of great leadership. But the biggest thing I want to drive home more than anything else today is that it all starts here. It all starts here. It's all internal. Everything about it should not be, what do I say? How do I get these people to do this? You know, what's leadership management system do I use, right? You want to try a new leadership system? You want to try a new management system, a new project management system or whatever? You know what you do? You adopt it personally, including if you have to do it duplicate. Like you have a company that says you have to do it this way and you think this way would be better. You keep doing exactly what they want and you develop your own and you track and you develop metrics. And then you can take those metrics to that higher up and say, I've been experimenting with this and I'd like you to take a look at it. And I have not backed off what you've asked of me. I've worked extra to provide this for you. I've charged nothing for it. I just want you to look at it because I think we're onto something here. Same thing with a team. Even when you have command authority, you can just do it. Did you adopt it first? Do you use it yourself? Do you buy the thing you're recommending? Right? If not, why are you recommending it? If you are not adopting a time management, you read a book and it said, here's a great time management system. You're like, that's what I'm going to do. That person is looking to be able to go to their boss and go, I implemented a two time management, a new project management system, right? They're not looking to actually improve the lives of their team. I would never hand to you something I haven't tried myself. Not as your leader. Like if you ask me for a product recommendation and you send me three products and I've never used a product, I could go, based on my instincts and what I'm reading, I would go with this, but it's not leadership. Leadership is when I say, hey, this is what I recommend. Whether it's project management, whether it's a product, whether it's a hiring procedure, whether it's a quality analysis, like if I can't execute it and say, for having done that, my results are better in a measurable way, then I'm not a leader. I'm an opportunist. I want you to think when I say the word leader to you, the first 2 to 3 people that come to your minds. And I want you to think as to what makes them a leader. And if you say people that you don't know because of their position, you know, a president or whatever, then you're not understanding what I'm saying. Somebody in your life that you followed that made your life better, and then ask yourself, what is it about this person that made me choose to follow what they teach and what they do when I've had other people say the same things and basically do the same things, but I didn't want to follow them? What was that intangible characteristic? And I'm going to tell you that in most instances, what it is that you realized at some point, even if they were a hard ass, even if you felt like they were always criticizing you, what they were doing was always done with some level of your best interest in mind. That they were actually trying to develop you, help you, push you more. The reason they pushed you is because they knew you fucking could. And a guy asked me, I'm like, why do you push me so fucking hard? Because I know you fucking can. He got pissed and he left and he came back the next day and said, man, nobody ever said that to me before. I didn't know how to handle it. Well, strap in, bitch, because it's just getting started, right? That's leadership. And some leaders are like me. We're hard. We'll give you tests. We'll push you. We want to see how you respond under stress. Some leaders are much more gentle in the way they lead. Both styles work if it's in here. If it's in here. And it's in everybody. Everybody is a leader. Just most never develop it. I want you to develop it because I know it will make your life better in every way. Whether you end up being a leader, you live out in the woods like a fucking Unabomber, your own little homestead, and do your own little things and ignore the fucking world. I want you to be a leader of yourself. And if you are going to be the head of a 5,000 headcount company someday as CEO, I want you to start out, that's crazy, being a leader of yourself. And when people say, I want to improve the country, whatever. I know it's been said a variety of ways so many times. You know, be the change you want to see or whatever. And it's kind of a derivative of that. But man, you want to improve this country. You want to improve the world. Develop leaders. Develop leaders. Critical thinking, independently minded leaders who think not just of themselves when they make a decision, but those who will follow them and those who will be touched by the effects of what they do. Even in government, we have so many leaders. Their problem is they're worried about the next election, not the people that they're supposed to serve. Because that's my last one for you. Leaders serve. They don't rule. They don't control. They don't use strength to push from a sense of authority. They may at times, because there are times where you have to say, if you don't, you're fucking fired. You better get your shit together. Things like that. Because it's only fair to the person they know they're at the edge. But most of the time, 98% of the time, they come from the role of servant. I serve my people first. One of the things we were taught in the military, you're a squad leader, an NCO, whatever. One thing, day to day, chow hall, people kind of come in as they want to. That's fine. You're in the field. Fucking people eat first. You make sure everybody that you're responsible ate before you put a fucking bite of food in your mouth. No rule, no law, no one would get in trouble if they didn't do it. But you knew who the people that didn't do it were, and they weren't leaders, and their guys wouldn't have followed them. They would have put them at the front of the line for a frag back in Vietnam. Just saying. Anyway, with that, I appreciate everybody today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I want to real quickly wrap up, and I want to remind you guys that, you know, one of the ways that I help pay all my bills is through product recommendations as an affiliate. And I do have a website you can check out. It's basically just a page on my site, tspaz.com, T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. This is where everything that I recommend is, and it's in alphabetical order by category, and you can go through all the reviews I've ever done. You can also find the item of the day there. And you help me out no matter what you buy, as long as you start your shopping there, even if it's not something I directly recommended. But today's item of the day is one of the best-selling products of all time on T-Spaz. I've sold thousands of these, literally. I brought this to you guys back in 2024. It was a top 10 seller in 2024. I just looked up the number. Last year, second year, so I've already sold a bunch of them to the installed base, right? I sold like 500 more of these last year. And I ran it once earlier this year and I sold like 50 of them. And after all of that, I've got no complaints. An electronic product too? Yeah. This is the Hamilton Beach 3-in-1 electric egg cooker. And a bunch of you just went, not buying it, Jack. I already got one. Yeah, don't buy another one just for me. That's not what you do here. But if you don't have one of these yet, you might want to get one. And if maybe you had one and it disappeared or something, you might want to get another. They're only about $20. And what it does is it cooks eggs, shockingly enough. But what it really excels at is its steam function for making basically hard-boiled or soft-boiled or medium-boiled eggs. And it's so simple. You get a little cup with it, and you fill it up to the level of water based on what you're doing that it says to do. And you pour that in the thing, and you set your eggs, and you put the dome on it, and you turn it on. And when the water's gone, a beep will sound, and it's done. Don't ask me what math they did to figure this out, but it works perfectly. The big thing is, when you go to peel that hard-boiled or soft-boiled or medium-boiled egg, it peels beautifully. And not after that egg sat in the refrigerator for a month and kind of shrunk up inside or whatever, which is the hack to get it to do it. But fresh eggs, it just came out of the coop. Now, the reason I brought this back around today is, in Mick saying his wife hates kitchen gadgets but loves this one, that's because it works, right? I'm bringing this around today, though, because my wife just came in with like 70 duck eggs in a tub. And so we need to do something with these. I'm like, we need to make some more deviled eggs, man, because those are like candy to me. And I figure many of you guys, being we're just heading into March now, you're in the egg volcano period of the year. So you might have need of something like this that gives you more use out of your eggs. And I'll throw a couple little other ones in addition to, you know, making deviled eggs. You can only eat so many deviled eggs and what have you. One of the other things we do this time of year, if we're not selling all our eggs, we will break them into a bowl, gently scramble them, not a full scramble like when you're making a scrambled egg or an omelet. And then we put that into a bag and we put that in our chamber vacuum sealer and we chamber vac seal it. We'll do some in fours because that's a pretty normal number for us to make like breakfast tacos or something like that out for ourselves. But we also do a bunch of bags that are a dozen per bag that get used in our fall workshop. So we're doing that too. So a lot of things you can do, you know, water glassing, you can do that. Lots of ways to make your eggs last. But eat some of them while they're fresh. And I'm telling you what, if you are keto, carnivore, primal, paleo, any of that, all natural, or doing the work to produce super high quality food in the form of beautiful backyards eggs, make some deviled eggs, man. And if you are like, I'm not sure what, you know, to do to make a deviled egg, there's a recipe in there, and there's a link to places to find other recipes. And the ones that we make that we like the best are made with bacon in them, because of course, jalapenos in them, because of course, and we don't use mayo. You don't use mayo? How do you do that? We use avocado, mashed avocado, and usually I just use the little cups of pre-made guacamole, which is basically mashed avocado with a few peppers in it from Costco. You buy a big pack organic. It's way less expensive that way, and you can throw them in the freezer. And so I'm going to make deviled eggs. I'll pull like three of those little cups out and make, you know, a couple dozen deviled eggs out of them. So check that out. I think you'll enjoy it. And again, I hope you really take from what I said today about leadership, beginning internally, and how it applies to career advancement, being a good mentor to your own kids, being a good member of your own family, being a better father or mother, husband and wife, but also how it allows you to better process all this bullshit in the world. Because I don't actually like to talk about the current event stuff as much as I do. I do it because it brings a lot of listeners. I'll be honest about that. But I also always try to bring to it how to think about it differently. You don't have to be on side A or side B in every issue. In fact, you shouldn't be. That's a clear sign that you're a herd member. If you're always on just one side, if you never have nuance. But what I'll tell you is, if you develop the skill set of internal leadership and then branch out into real world leadership of others, you'll never be instantly picking A or B. Now, I'm not saying sometimes you might be like, actually, in this case, I think A has it right. Occasionally, A will be right. Occasionally, B will be right. In most instances, A will have points that are valid and B will have points that are valid. And the truth will lie somewhere other than either side has. I'm not going to say what most people would say. Truth lies somewhere in the middle. That's generally a fallacy. One side tends to be actually a little more right than others, or often both sides are so wrong that even their valid points don't matter, and you need a completely original look at the situation. You know where else that happens? In a company when you have to make a decision and management says X or Y. Is hold on. You pay me a pretty good salary because of what I can do. Here's C. Have you ever even thought about this? That's what real leadership does. And it impacts every aspect of your life. And it only is real leadership if it impacts every aspect of your life. And it has to be, because real leadership always does. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with another one.
They said you should have a house the American way. $1 down, $1 a month, and you never have to pay.